We're doing Megillat Esther, and after a long introduction, we can actually begin the story of the Megillah. So let's do a quick overview of the story, and then start analyzing it with more depth. Our story is basically about a Persian king, Ahasuerus. In the third year of his reign, he throws this lavish party for all his officers, and he spends a half a year showing them all his wealth. And after that, he makes a party in the capital for 7 days. So after a half a year party, he has a 7 day party. In that 7 day party, he invites all his subjects in the capital. And on the seventh day, he is good and drunk. And he summons his wife, Vashti, who is of majestic blood. She has royal blood. And he summons her to come, and he wants to show off her beauty. She refuses, and he asks his wise men, what should we do? They counsel him to depose her. It doesn't overtly say that he had her beheaded or hung, but that's our tradition. And to publicize this, that the man runs the house, and that's the letter he has to send out, that the men are bosses, and whenever a wife rebels, then she can be taken to court over it. Because look at Vashti. She dared talk back to Ahasuerus, and so she was removed from the throne over that. And so they send out this letter, and everyone reads it and thinks, what's wrong with our king? He's sending us a letter telling us we should all be men in the house. So when Ahasuerus regains soberty, that's how you pronounce it?
Sobriety.
Sobriety, okay. Not one of those words I use often. What? Shafui. When he becomes shafui, when he regains his...
consciousness?
Yeah, not consciousness. Collects his thoughts. So he starts asking, hey, where's Vashti? And they tell him, well, you had her executed. And he says, yeah. So they summon all the young girls... married or not, doesn't seem to bother him. Whatever girl is good looking, he summons. And he has this beauty pageant where every girl spends 6 months in this type of oil, 6 months in that type of oil. And then after a year, they're brought before the king. And then every night he spends another night with another girl. And finally he decides who he's going to marry. So there's this fantastic girl named Esther. She's 75 years old. She's the niece of Mordechai. And Mordechai has actually taken her as his wife, not only as his niece. She was an orphan, and he took her in. And then when she became of age, she wanted to marry him. They got married. And Mordechai's taking care of her. And then when all the girls are summoned, so she's taken by force, and she's put in the harem. And after her turn comes, Ahasuerus decides he likes her, and he marries her. And what?
75?
Okay, so our tradition is she was 75. That's not what the text seems to say, right? She was the most gorgeous woman. So then she must have been a little younger, right? So let's say she was 15. But the tradition is she was 75. Okay, so... okay, 12. So, Doivanti, how old do you want her to be? Mordechai overhears two servants. They want to poison the king. He tells Esther. Esther tells the king. The two are hung. And now we're ready for our story to begin. Okay, Esther is queen. And Mordechai is sitting by the gates. Remember, Mordechai came out to Persia, to Shushan, to try and get a license to rebuild the temple. He's still trying to figure out politically how he's going to do that. But Ahasuerus seems intent not letting that happen. And Ahasuerus appoints his top advisor Haman in charge of the kingdom. Basically, Haman is given license that wherever he goes, everyone must bow to him. And Haman institutes a decree that no one can approach the king without invitation. Otherwise, they will be executed unless the king extends his scepter. And this is a way of keeping people away from the king. He's basically taking control of the kingdom, and Ahasuerus doesn't even know it. Like, he's instituted this law, and now no one can come. One of the reasons Haman does this is to ensure that the Jews don't come and plead to allow them to rebuild the temple or to annul his own decree, as we'll see in a minute. Now, Mordechai is sitting there at the gates, and he won't bow down to Haman, so Haman gets super upset. So he draws lots, and comes out the month of Adar, And he comes to Ahasuerus and says, there's this nation, they're all scattered. They don't keep our religion, they don't marry into us. If a fly falls into their wine, they take it out and drink it. But if you touch the wine, they won't drink it, they'll throw it out. They'll say you have to clean the cup, dig it in the, stuff it in the ground. They do all kinds of weird things. Let's write a decree to wipe them out, and I'll give you 10,000 coins, 10,000 silver coins, aside from whatever will be collected, you know, from the great pogrom. And the king gives him his ring, and he says, keep the money. I've been wanting to get rid of them too. It's a great idea. Do what you want. And they sit down and they drink, and they send out a letter telling the people, you have next year, the letter is sent out in the month of Nisan. They tell them 11 months from now when the month of Adar comes, so you can force the Jews to convert to Zoroastrianism. You can kill and annihilate all the Jews, young, old, women. You have one day to get rid of these people and take all their money. So they send this letter out, and in Shushan, that's the capital, so obviously that's where everyone hears first. Haman and Ahasuerus sit down for a drink, and the city of Shushan hears what's going on, and everyone's very upset. Now, Mordechai goes weeping, and he comes to the gates all dressed in sack, and Esther gets word that Mordechai's out there, so she summons her loyal servant, Hasach. She sends him to Mordechai, and Mordechai tells him what's going on. He gives him the letter. And Hasach tells Esther, and Esther tells Hasach, go tell him that everyone knows that if you come into the king without an invitation, so you get killed unless the king stands a scepter. I haven't been summoned in 30 days. I can't just walk in there. There's time. You have 11 months. You want me to go and risk my life? Who says we'll get anywhere with it? And Hasach says, I'm not giving such a message. He walks away. He says, you want to say you're not going to step up to the plate? You got to send that with someone else, not with me. So she sends word to Mordechai, and Mordechai tells her, listen here, don't think you're going to get away with it because you're up in the palace. If you'll be silent now, then God will save the Jewish people a different way, but you will lose from it. This is your opportunity. Who knows if in a year from now you're still going to be on the throne. Now you're there, now you can do something, now you got to do something. You can't wait and say, look, we have time. It doesn't work that way. So Esther says, fine. Tell the Jews they have to unite, and everyone in Shushan has to fast for 3 days. And I and my servants will all fast, and then I'll walk into the king. After that preparation, the Jews will unite, they will pray, and I'll go into the king, and then I'll start doing like you told me. So Mordechai listens to her. It's Pesach. Instead of celebrating Pesach, everyone's fasting. All of Shushan fasts. And after 3 days of fasting, Esther is very faint. She goes into the king, and she finds favor in his eyes, he extends the scepter, and Esther invites him and Haman to a party that night. So they come to the party, she gives them to eat and drink, the king says, okay, what did you want that you invited us here? And she says, tomorrow. And the next day, that night, Haman walks out, he's feeling great, even the queen likes him. And there he sees Mordechai, who doesn't budge in his honor, everyone else is bowing, and Mordechai doesn't move. So Haman comes home, and he summons all his friends and his wife, his top advisor. He tells them, you know how wealthy I am? Look at my belt. On my belt, I have a listing of all the storage houses and how much gold and silver is in each one. And he starts listing it off. And he's the wealthiest non-Jew that ever lived. So Haman says, but you know, even tonight there was a party. And Ahasuerus, who's now king of the world, his wife didn't invite anyone, just me. The king and I. That's it. Now he doesn't realize what's in store. And tomorrow she's making another party, and only I'm invited. But you know what? All of this is worthless for me. When I walk out and I see that Jew Mordechai sitting there, it's all worthless. And Zeresh, his wife, tells him, okay, make a tree that's very high, 50 amos high, that's very, very high, that's higher than this building. And tomorrow morning, you'll ask the king to have Mordechai hung, and then you'll hang him, and tomorrow night you'll come to the party. You'll be very happy, and everyone will see how Mordechai was hung on your behalf. And that night, the king can't sleep, so he asks to have some records brought. Benny, let's just cover the story. They go over the records, and they see that Mordechai saved the king's life not so long ago, a few years ago. And the king says, did we ever reward him for this? And they say, no. Now, Haman's come bright and early to ask the king for permission to hang Mordechai. He's already set up the tree to hang Mordechai on. And the king says, who's out there? They tell him Haman. He says, okay, have him brought in. Haman walks in. The king says, you know, I want to honor someone. I want to give him a lot of honor. What do you say I do to such a person? And Haman starts going off. He says, give him your crown. Give him your royal clothing. Give him as much royalty as you can. The horse you rode on when you became king. Now, what Haman doesn't know is that the reason Achshverosh was up that night was because he says to himself, this is very weird. My wife wants to have special time with me. What's she inviting this guy for? Why was Haman there at the party tonight? And that was really Esther's plan. So Achashverosh has just had a wild dream. And in his dream, he saw Haman charging at him with a sword. And he wakes up from the dream and he's all scared. And he says, wait a second. How come I didn't see it until now? Haman wants me dead. He wants to take the throne. And being that I don't have a dynasty, technically, I took the throne and my father wasn't king. So I'm a little bit in danger here. Why didn't anyone tell me this? Wait a second. Maybe there were people who tried helping me in the past, and I didn't keep my buddies well smeared. Maybe I never paid anyone back right. So he says, bring me back my records. And he started reading through the records. Now, wait a second. Mordecai saved my life. What did I ever do for him? Now, Haman's out there, and the king is thinking he wants to bump me off. He wants to take the crown. So the king calls in Haman, and he says, what do I do if I want to honor someone? So Haman says, well, give me your crown. Now, the king knows full well. Achashverosh knows Haman. Haman's thinking that he's about to get all this honor. So the king turns pale. He says, oh, my dream was right. He thinks he should be walking around my crown. And Haman sees that the king isn't so happy with that idea. So he says, well, take the horse you rode on when you were inaugurated and take your royal clothing that no one else would dare wear but you and dress him with that. And then take one of the nobles to walk around and yell out, this is what's done to a person the king wants to honor. So Achashverosh says, great idea. I want you to do that to Mordechai. Now, Haman was about to ask for license to kill him. Now, Haman asked for a noble, a regular noble, to do this. He was the top advisor. This wasn't exactly his job. The king was saying something by saying, yeah, go do that quickly. So Haman says, which Mordechai? Achashverosh says, oh, the one sitting by the gate. He says, oh, him. Well, you know, you could just give him a province. Let him be mayor of a province. You don't have to give him all that. So the king says, that's a good idea. He says, oh, you want? Give him a lot of money. The king says, that's a good idea. He says, everything he suggests. So Achshverosh says, everything you said? Give him that too. Now go take him on the horse. Now the details of the story we'll discuss when we learn it more in depth. Haman spends the whole day taking Mordechai around town, calling out before him. That night he's summoned to the party. He isn't smelling too good because he's been walking around sweating, you know, leading the horse. And at the party, Esther says, you know, what I want from you, the king, is that there's this evil man who wants to kill out my whole people. You know, if it was only a matter of wealth, if he'd want to sell all my people into slavery, I'd be okay, but he wants me dead. Now the king is very upset because he's just been thinking Haman wants me dead. Now he hears he wants the queen dead. So he asks who it is, and she says it's Haman, and then the king gets really upset, and Haman doesn't know what to do with himself. The king walks out. He comes back in, and just as he comes back in, Haman trips onto Esther's bed. And the king says, oh, you want to take her while I'm still around? And so Harvona, who's standing there, who was Haman's buddy, he says, you know, there's a tree out there that Haman's been preparing for Mordechai, who actually saved your life, and it's 50 feet high, 50 amas high. So the king says, hang him on it. And that's what they do. And with that, Haman's dead, but the story's not over. Because although the king gives all the wealth that Haman owned, he gives it to Esther and Mordechai, he doesn't annul his decree. So now months are going to pass where Haman's gone, but the decree is still looming. And Esther again enters and risks her life and asks the king, she bows before him and cries, please annul the decree. And he then grants her license. She and Mordechai write a new decree. They send out new horsemen, and the Jews are allowed on the 13th to take revenge from their enemies, and the king will back the Jews, and there won't be a mass pogrom against the Jews. And then the Jews go out against Amalek. They don't just kill anyone. And on the 13th of Adar, they kill out every Amaleki they know. And then Esther asks for permission to have Haman's 10 kids hung and to kill out on the in Shushan, in the capital, whatever nobles were threatening the Jews, and they took the 14th as well, and then they instituted Purim so that the Jews would celebrate on the day they rested from the fighting. They would celebrate the fact that yesterday we weren't all killed. On the contrary, we were able to get rid of our enemies. So most of the Jews would celebrate on the 14th, because that's when they rested from the original decree of the 13th, and the Jews of Shushan celebrate the 15th. And that's our story in a nutshell. Now let's see what's really going on here, because like we said, there's a lot beneath the scene, and we'll try to cover as much as possible. Be very focused, because I'm going to try to go very fast. Yes?
Did Bnei Israel pass the second time Esther came
into the... I'm unaware of that.
So you said Mordechai would have had no problem having them sold if they already got sold in this
way. That was her talking. That's what Esther said. Maybe we'll analyze that later. Yes?
You just said the first time I ever heard that. I thought the Jews had the right to defend themselves against those threats to them. You just said these were the Amalekites?
Correct.
Of Haman, they were...
Correct.
Wow.
Right. Yes.
What's the connection between Tanis Esther and the day of Nicanor?
That's a great discussion. Not for now. Remind me. We'll try to get back to it. Not tonight. Okay. So Ahasuerus is given reign over the world, 127 countries, and he's established a throne that looks like the awesome throne of Solomon. Solomon's throne had a whole mechanism where he'd just step on one step, and then he'd have different animals that would lift his feet and take him up all the way to the throne. Then he'd sit down, and he'd have a magnetic eagle come down, take his crown off his head and hold it up. He set it all up with his genius. He set up a whole mechanism based on machinery that would work with, what do they call that? Something like that, where you use gravity to move stuff. So if you look closely at the Medrash, it seems like that was his brilliance in setting up this whole thing that would use his weight to shift. But there was a pharaoh who conquered his throne. He tried using it, and he lost his feet. He became crippled from it, because if you didn't know how to use the steps, then the machine would just knock his foot out of place, and that's what happened. So Ahasuerus was scared of trying. He tried to get on, so he couldn't figure out how. So he brought in wise men from Alexandria, and they tried to make a replica, and it didn't exactly work. But at any rate, on the third year, after 3 years trying, they had a throne. He wanted to show, like, he could sit on Solomon's throne. Okay, so he had this throne, and it was time to shift it from Shushan to the capital. And they told him, sorry, we didn't factor right. We can't transport the throne. It won't last the transport. So he says, okay, we'll shift the capital to Shushan. And he builds his palace around the throne. And they have this throne there, and he makes this party. And he spends a half a year. Now remember, the Persian Medes were Zoroastrianisms. They believed in two forces in the world, good and evil, light and darkness. So his party is the 6 months of light, right? They would start partying from when the sun, from the solstice, when the sun becomes stronger, when you have longer days, and they're partying those 6 months, 180 days, right? And then the 180 days are up. The days of darkness are about to come in. So he has a 7-day party for the locals, which was an interesting move, because our sages weren't sure if this reflects his intellect or lack thereof. Ordinarily, we would have recommended you first placate the people around you, because whatever happens, you want them to be on your side. The flip side of it is, if they're right near you, you could always placate them. So you have time. So he makes this party, and he summons all the Jews. And his goal in this party is to show them, your 70 years are up, you haven't been redeemed, look at this, I'm using the temple's vessels, and nothing's happening. Right, Belshazzar tried, and the hand came and the writing on the wall, but I stopped the building of the temple, and you weren't redeemed, and God's not here for you. And look, your 70 years are up, and it's you're goners. So you could become one of us, and you could enjoy the party. And he himself will wear the clothing of the Kohen Gadol as well. Yes?
Why were the Jews celebrating with him?
So he made it even worse. He sent out a decree that said, you don't have to come. This is a party for all the citizens, whoever wants to. And so Mordechai gets up and says, Jews, don't go. And the Jews felt that they have to show that they're good citizens. The Persians were very good to us. They freed us from slavery. They gave us license to rebuild the temple. Yes, there's a slight glitch. They now took back that license, but they were very good to us. So now the king's making a party for all his loyal subjects. How could it be we won't go?
It was just a nationalistic idea.
Now, Ahasuerus did one better. He called up Mordechai and said, I want you to send me some rabbis so that all the food will be strictly kosher, so that any Jew that wants to eat can eat, and the food will be exactly the way you would eat it. So on the one hand, Mordechai has to comply because the king told him, I want you to give me rabbis and I want you to arrange kosher food. On the other hand, in the synagogues, he's saying, don't go. A Jew doesn't belong there. But the Jews don't listen. And they come to the party.
It's a sign of defeat that the Kohen Gadol's clothes...
Right, they didn't know what was coming. No one knew that's what he would do. This was a surprise at the party. At the party, he had a few surprises set up. The first surprise was he showed up on the seventh day wearing the Kohen Gadol's clothing. And he took out the vessels of the temple, and everyone looked at them, and suddenly all his vessels seemed so simple next to the vessels of King Solomon. And he made separate seating, made a woman's party. But his idea was he would bring Vashti into the party, and she was without clothing. And then things would start getting wild, and then the men and women would start mixing, and you'd have a lot of promiscuity going on, and then he'd get the Jews to sin, and everyone would fall. The only thing is, Vashti would take Jewish girls and make them work on Shabbos without clothing in public places, and this was one of the ways they were trying to break the spirit of the Jews. And so now she's going to be paid back on the Shabbos. And so on the Shabbos, it's Shabbos, and here's one of the sources for Zmiros. Why do we sing Shabbos Zmiros? The Medrash says, what happens when a group of Jews get together and sit down for a meal? So they should talk Torah. And if they don't know enough to talk Torah, they sing praises of God. That's what our Zmiros are. Think about what we say in Zmiros. I always marvel on Simchas Torah. When everyone's dancing for 6 hours straight, what are they singing? What are the words we sing? B'tein bili beinu, we say, give it in our hearts that we should learn Torah properly, we should do your mitzvos properly. What songs do we sing? Think about it. What songs do... Tov li Torah picha malfei zav v'kesef, your precious Torah is more precious than all the gold and silver. What songs do you... Guys, what songs do you know? I'm saying, think about the words of the songs. I was once by Rabbi Monk from Telz, and he told me, an artist once told him, you want to gauge where people are holding, look at their music. I had a beautiful experience of being on a taxi here. And the driver had on his iPhone Eric Einstein being interviewed. He died not so long ago. And I don't know who Eric Einstein is. Eric Einstein. But I was blown away. The guy spoke with such humility. They were interviewing him. And he spoke and he said how his choreographer and... the different people on his staff, he was describing how each one of them is really amazing. And he's just a part of a broader scene. You listen to it. I have no idea. Really?
Yeah, both his kids became
relatives. I marveled. I said, wow. And then he put on some music by him. And the words were so nice. I said to myself, wow, the guy has real meaning in his songs. If this is what Israelis... who call themselves secular are listening to, we're in a very good place today. I was very impressed.
Even
so,
talking about God and stuff, believe it or not.
Okay.
No,
so back to our... So, Ahasuerus is throwing a party. Ahasuerus is inviting everyone. And Ahasuerus gives them license. He gives them permission. You don't have to come. But... at the party, he has a thought, and our sages say, what happens when we sit at a Shabbos table? If we're not talking Torah, we end up singing the praises of Hashem. But what happens when people who don't have Torah, what happens when they sit to a party and they start drinking? So our sages say, what starts coming out is they talk about women. That's what happens. And that's obviously, it's not the way a Jewish house is supposed to look like. And so that's what happens at Ahasuerus' party. He's sitting with different nobles, and they start talking about which women are nicest. What are the most beautiful women? And this one says the Persian, this one says the Mede, and then Ahasuerus says, guys, everything you're talking about is one thing, but I use a totally different vessel than the rest of you. Notice the way he talks about his wife, the vessel he uses. He says, Kli shani mishtamesh bo, the vessel I use. Right? That's the term he uses.
Wonderful.
What? Yes. is different. It's like nothing you guys have ever seen before. And he sends a letter. He sends his seven eunuchs to Vashti, telling her, make sure to come with your crown on. In other words, nothing but your crown. Now, Vashti was very excited about this. But Vashti went to put on, to get ready, and suddenly she saw one pimple, and then another pimple, then another pimple. So she's like not exactly feeling like she's at her prime to show off. So Vashti sends back and says, listen here, you horsemen. You took care of my grandfather's horses. Well, you've been too drunk. You're out of it. What are you doing telling me to show up like that? And she says to him, look, what a stupid idea you have. If they say I'm not beautiful, so then you're booshed out. They're going to say, that's what you call beautiful. And if they think I am beautiful, so you run the risk that they'll kill you to take me. You're getting them all jealous of you. It's a lose-lose situation. Achashverosh is a stupid thing. What are you asking me to do? And you know what? My grandfather, when he had Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah executed, he didn't summon them without clothing. Even when a Jew, right? The low caste of society was being summoned for execution. He was entitled to show up with clothing. And I'm the queen, and you're summoning me without clothing? What's wrong with you? Yeah, my grandfather could drink 1,000 cups of wine and he didn't go drunk. And this guy, what's wrong with him? Look at how drunk he is, how fast. He gets this, he's boiling with madness. He's not sure what to do. And this is where we'll pick up Mizrach on Thursday night.